Move on to the question and answer session, starting with the questions that have been posted online. And once we get through those questions, if time allows, we can open up the phone lines for questions. I definitely encourage you to continue posting your questions online as you think of them. So let's start, Denise, we'll start with some questions for you. And I think Abby Swain, thank you to Abby, has answered some of them, but I'm gonna go ahead and ask you as well, Denise, just to get your take on some of these questions. So let's see here. Does the Smart Way program collaborate or ever team with the U.S. Department of Energy Clean Cities program?
We are working with DOE in the, trying to coordinate some of the efforts that DOE has reached out to many of the companies that partner with Smart Way. DOE's emphasis has primarily been on fuel. Smart Way has not focused too much on fuel in terms of
thank you. Another question for you is any information you have about these types of programs at the state or regional level? And the question was further clarified further down, talking about Smart Way sister projects. Right. And we had, I think Abby typed in a response to that as well. Let's see. She said she doesn't know of any, and she said maybe Denise does, but she says, personally, I'd advocate that it works better to have one national partnership with all that sophistication and richness rather than competing local programs. It's good to recognize fuel-efficient freight movement whenever, however it occurs, though. Another question for you, Denise. Do state DOT fleet services participate in Smart Way?
You know, we have been in touch with the one federal agency, and I think they were included in the slide that I presented, is the General Services Administration's Transportation Group. And they cover, gosh, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but they, of course, do a lot of freight movement and transportation, and they have formally joined Smart Way. They have several hundred, they've engaged several hundred carriers. They've really encouraged, under executive order for the greening of the supply chain, they've encouraged other federal agencies to participate. If any federal agencies, or state agencies for that matter, are on the line and are interested, I'd encourage them to send me an email. We really do want to work with our sister agencies, and we have various overtures, but as everybody can be aware, I mean, it's just very difficult to work through the bureaucracy sometimes to actually get an agreement struck to have them, you know, have them join the partnership. But we do work towards that. So please send me information if you're interested in learning more.
All right. Another question. Can you break out the emissions and fuel conservation data by geographic location?
Define that. I'd have to look a little more carefully. I mean, would it be a fair depiction? And we could, in terms of, as I said, headquarters and even some regional offices, but of course, vehicles, trucks travel all over, and so it would be somewhat geographic, but I'm sure there would be some concerns about how accurate that would be.
Okay.
How you would spread that out without giving a little more information on the routes of travel by the trucks.
All right. Another question for you. Does SmartWay collaborate with the U.S.-Mexico international border areas per Sylvia's presentation today?
Yes, I believe we have been working to some degree with the on-the-border issues. I have not been involved. Sylvia, I don't know if Sylvia can speak to this or not, but I know we've had some discussions about, clean trucks back and forth across the border.
Right. Just to add in, yes, and we did have a presentation on SmartWays at our Greening Transportation at the Border workshop in February. Also, Sue Stedema, she is also a member of the JWC, so she participates and moves us in that direction from the EPA.
Okay, thank you. Denise, this is a comment here that came from someone at EPA asking you, Denise, to please make sure to mention the DERA competitive national RFP that should be out any day now for $20 million nationwide for diesel emission reductions, retrofits, repowers, TSE, electrification of vehicles and equipment.
Okay, thank you for mentioning that, Jenna. We can certainly maybe in follow-up post that information.
All right, and there is a web address listed there as well. All right. Well, I'm going to move on to some questions. I think we had another question for Sylvia. I know we got to one question before, and I'm going to go back to it. There was another one for you, Sylvia, that I'll go back to that we didn't get to. Let's see. You mentioned that all states are represented on the JWC. Do you have a list of state representatives?
I do. All the border states, I'll clarify that. I'm sorry if I misled anybody, but all the border states, which there are 10 of them, 4 on the U.S., 6 on the Mexican side, and they're on our website, which I failed to put up there, but basically it's www.borderplanning.fhwe.dot. Or the easier way to do it is just Google U.S. Mexico JWC or Joint Working Committee, and they'll come up. And there's a members section on there, and everybody's listed on both sides of the border. The Mexican members and also the U.S. members. But if you want somebody in particular, if you're interested in a state in particular, just ask me. I'll definitely tell you which one it is.
All right. Thank you. Another one for you, Sylvia. Will the input data for emission modeling from MOVES, EMFAC, and M6 Mexico be made available as a deliverable with the study?
The emissions data that we used?
I believe, yeah, it says input data for emission modeling, so
okay.
I believe, yeah.
It could be border wait time data, whatever. Yes, anything that we use should be included in that study.
All right, thank you. I'm going to go back up to some questions now for Joe. Let's see here. Do you know of any program researching barriers to TSE usage? I've been trying to understand why facilities are underutilized.
We spent a couple of studies where we interviewed the actual truckers and the operators and asked them the questions, why are you using it, why are you not using it, etc., etc. And we learned quite a bit from that. For example, some truck drivers told us that their companies don't support using TSE. Some of the very small companies thought they lose money if they pay for that type of equipment or for that type of technology. And some of them just frankly said they don't like it. I'm not talking about those who don't use it. They say they're so used to the noise of their truck engine making at night, they sleep much better if they can listen to the idling of their truck. And so those are the kind of answers we got. And I can also maybe refer you to Linda Gaines of Argo National Lab. She's done some work on some of those reasons as well.
All right, thank you. Another question for you is, let me go back up here. Can you explain why the two tested APUs had converse performance with the hot and cold test? Is there information somewhere on what APUs perform better under hot versus cold conditions?
I think the answer to that question is that the APU basically got two components. The one part is the power source, that's the little diesel engine that provides the power, and the other component is the actual AC unit or heating or cooling unit that it drives. So I think what happened there is the efficiency of the heating and cooling device that these APUs drive, they differ. And sometimes, for example, when it provides heating, it's more efficient than the other unit. So I think that is why we saw kind of a flip of the data when we did the cold versus the hot. And the second part of the question, I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface in terms of getting data together on APUs. One can wait till more data is becoming available. We're continuing to do more testing for EPA, and or one can talk to the individual manufacturers, but often what they provide is under very easy conditions. They would run it under very mild conditions. What we're doing in our environmental test chambers, putting it to the extremes, and often these devices can hardly keep up with the requirement to keep the cabin at 73 degrees.
All right, thank you. We have another question for you. Do you have any plans to test using a more recent base year truck to compare APU emissions to engines with after-treatment control devices?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like, for example, the SCR, catalytic reducers, that's now available on 2011 and newer trucks for NOx reductions. That is what we're doing currently in this next phase of the study. We're getting some of those trucks to develop baselines for new trucks. And we're also testing APUs that actually have DPFs just to see how well they handle the particulates. So yes, we are currently doing that.
All right, thank you. And what priorities do you see for future research related to TSE? We'll go back now. Denise, I think this question was for you, but anybody feel free to jump in. Is there any work going on regarding TSE obstacles at rest areas in regards to obstacles to placing units? And Joe, I don't know if you'd know anything about that.
Obstacles to placing TSE units. No, I think it probably varies by area. I think different states have different policies regarding that. I cannot imagine any obstacles per se. I can imagine that if the economics is not working out too well for the suppliers, then it's difficult for them to stay in business, as we've seen with some companies in the past.
possible. I know that happens here in Arizona where that was an obstacle of utilizing some of that technology.
Yeah, I think it's doses. It is sometimes just habit, and I think as fuel costs go up, these obstacles, unless they're sort of imposed, for some weird reason, I think they'll quickly go away.
All right. We have another question here that I'll put out actually to all presenters. Has anyone looked at the effectiveness of idle reduction technologies and other types of vehicles such as school or transit buses, such as low resistant tires? Or actually, anyone looked at the effectiveness of idle reduction and fuel conservation devices or technologies on other types of vehicles? And I'll let any of the presenters jump in if you have a response to that. Let's see. Or, and then they further clarified, or different vehicle weight classes. But it sounds like, I think, Joe, you just provided, all your thoughts on that. So let's see here. We don't have any additional questions typed in at this point. What we can do is open the phone lines and see if anybody has any questions over the phone, but you can also continue typing in questions. So Adam, if you could give instructions on how to ask a question over the phone. While we're waiting to see if we have any questions on the line, let's see, we have another question here. Would TSE be appropriate for rest areas where parking is limited to a few hours at most versus overnight parking at private truck stops?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have any other questions on the phone?
There are no further questions.
All right. Joe, going back to the previous question about where we talked about other types of vehicles, someone asked if you could give more information on construction vehicles. Joe, another question for you. In terms of commercial vehicle electrification facility installation, do you feel there has been a threshold reached in terms of momentum of the adoption of these types of installations so that they will continue to be installed in an accelerating fashion? I don't see any additional questions typed in, so I'm going to go ahead and start just closing out. But if you do think of additional questions, we still have about 10 minutes, so feel free to type them in and I can go back to them. But I do want to thank everybody for attending today's seminar. I also want to thank our three presenters. And in addition, I'd like to thank Abby Swain from the EPA, who has helped a lot by typing in a lot of responses into the chat box as well. The recorded version of today's seminar will be available within the next week or two on the Talking Freight website. And actually, I do see a question that just came in, so I'm going to go back to the questions since we do have time to answer that. Let's see here. It says, Joe, I am a member of a local transportation association. One large trucking company in our association has compiled, One large trucking company in our association has complied with the California requirement of using auxiliary sources to not idle trucks while parked, which was a large amount of money. Their concern with complying is that there is no enforcement, such as when their drivers park for their rest period, many other trucks just idle. Is enforcement going to be studied as part of the equation?
Yeah, that is also a great question. Even in addition to just monitoring these idle reduction technologies, we're involved in the Austin area with looking at some idle policies where they say after 5 minutes they need to shut down. And the big question is, do people really shut down their trucks? So what we did was we went a little bit underground and looked and went to these truck stops and different places where idling takes place and just observed to what extent idling really takes place. So that's one thing. And the other thing is clearly when enforcement is visible, then the behavior changes totally. So it's very true, and I think we all know it. If there's no enforcement, it's not going to be done. And if the enforcement kicks up, it's going to happen, and then all the costs associated with that. And I just think, thinking out loud, another big area that should perhaps be studied by people that are knowledgeable in this area is the whole issue of behavior. I think there's so much to be learned from behavior and how people would change their behavior and on what basis. So I just think that's a big topic that needs to be addressed as well.
All right. Thank you. Denise, a question for you. Could SmartWay help fleets meet California regulations requiring accelerated fleet replacement upgrade?
Well, SmartWay is a voluntary program, and certainly California has been very keen on the developments that and the progress that SmartWay has helped to facilitate in the marketplace. I know we have, I'm not familiar with the California's replacement program. I know certainly under our new greenhouse gas rule, there are early reduction, early replacement types of incentives in place. So I would think if there's a regulatory, if there's anything that could help support that, it would, and given that that's a regulatory regime that you're in, there would be probably some parallel in our greenhouse gas rule. But certainly insofar as SmartWay has been instrumental in supporting and encouraging the development of technology within the marketplace on an independent, voluntary basis, I think it will certainly support whatever, you know, what it is California is trying to accomplish.
All right. Thank you. Well, again, I don't see any other questions, so I'll just continue to close out, but I'll stop if I see anything else coming in. As I mentioned, the recording and presentations from today will be available in the next 2 to 3 weeks on the Talking Freight website, and I'll send out an email once they are available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, please make sure you're either signed in with your first and last name or type your name into the chat box if you're attending with a group of people. I encourage everybody to download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. We actually, we're especially looking right now for ways we can improve upon Talking Freight for the future. We've been doing these seminars for almost 9 years now, pretty much using the same format, and we want to make sure that they continue to be of interest to the attendees. And we're just looking for your input on you know, what should we keep the same? Is there anything we should change? So either fill out the evaluation form and send that to me, type it into the chat box, or just go ahead and send me an email if you have any thoughts. The next seminar will be held on May 16th and will be on the impacts of heavy or oversized truck shipments on the U.S. highway network. This webinar is currently available for registration, and you can visit the Talking Freight website shown on the slide on your screen. It's the third to last bullet to register for this webinar. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. The listserv is the primary way that we advertise Talking Freight, but it's also used to share freight information among about 1,000 or so members. It's a good way, if you have a question, to converse with your peers about it. So with that, it doesn't look like we have any additional questions, so we'll go ahead and close out. Thank you to all our presenters, and thank you to everybody who attended, and I hope you have a good rest of the day.